if there's one thing you learn about living on a farm, it's that life is just a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away, to quote James chapter 4, verse 4. All flesh is like grass, Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 24, and all its glory like the flower of grass. The grass withers, the flower falls. Again, all flesh is said to behave this way. We're all more or less wasting away, eventually to return to the dust of the ground from which we came, Genesis 3, verse 19. Well, as I said, when living on a farm, that reality becomes all the more real to you. In case you didn't know it, there's plenty of death to be witnessed on a farm. You may have stillborn piglets, or ewes that get taken down by a prowling coyote, or lambs that don't survive after being orphaned or maybe even rejected by their mothers. You may have chickens get picked off by the hawks or raccoons. Your loyal dog who happens to wander a little too far from home one day may get in a fight with the neighbor's pit bulls down the road, only to limp back to your front door, bleeding and broken, unable to survive the night. By the way, all of those scenarios we've experienced out here on the homestead. That's not even counting the work of butchering the pigs and lambs and chickens for the freezer that you commonly expect on a farm. Farm life has its cruel moments. It really does. So cruel, in fact, that we know it drove one man in days gone by to stop believing in God and to embrace an evolutionary mindset founded on the idea of impartial natural selection, that being survival of the fittest, as the only plausible explanation for all the world's carnage. Of course, I'm talking about none other than Charles Darwin. Not long ago, as a part of our homeschool lessons, our family watched the 2009 movie Creation about the life and struggles of Charles Darwin, including his struggles coping with his own daughter's premature death. That was in addition to his work in the field of science and his expedition to the Galapagos Islands, and his struggle upon returning from that to reconcile all his observations from nature with the Anglican faith of his family and wife, which for one reason or another, he was unable to reconcile. In one of the scenes, the film depicts him attending a church service one Sunday with his wife, and while beginning his sermon, the minister opens in prayer, thanking God for his sovereignty over creation, including over the smallest of all creatures, even the timing of when a sparrow falls to the ground, trusting then that not even our own sufferings and the timing of our own deaths are apart from God's divine decree. The minister there affirming God's control over it all. Upon which Darwin, unable to accept that biblical proposition, is shown to get up from the pew and to quietly exit the church. He's unable to harmonize such theology with his scientific discovery. To quote from one of his actual writings, Darwin elaborates on his struggle this way. He says, quote, "With respect to the theological view of the question, this is always painful to me. I am bewildered. I had no intention to write atheistically, but I own that I cannot see as plainly as others do. There seems to me too much misery in the world. I cannot persuade myself that a beneficent and omnipotent God would have designedly created the ichneumati, which, if you look up what that is, that's a kind of parasitic wasp, with the express intention of their feeding within the living bodies of caterpillars, or that a cat should play with mice." He goes on to say, "I cannot anyhow be continued to view this wonderful universe, and especially the nature of man, and to conclude that everything is the result of brute force. I am inclined to look at everything as resulting from design laws, with the details, whether good or bad, left to the working out of what we may call chance. Not that this notion at all satisfies me. I feel most deeply that the whole subject is too profound for the human intellect. A dog might as well speculate on the mind of Newton. Let each man hope and believe what he can." End quote. In other words, Darwin looks at the caterpillar eating your garden plants and the wasp that has symbiotically implanted her eggs within that caterpillar, only to have them hatch from within, ripping her flesh apart as the baby wasps emerge. And he looks at the barn cat who chases the mice around your house, much like in a game of hide and seek, only to end the game with the cat ripping the entrails out of the mouse's body and crunching its tiny skull for a snack, which, by the way, is another scene common on our farm. And Darwin says, "I cannot fathom how such brutality can be a part of God's design." Though, quite ironically, he admits nature does appear to operate according to some set of larger pre-established laws. Perhaps he's leaving room for some sort of creator there, I don't know, but everything else, all the lives and deaths that carry on within the larger design are just left to randomly play out. Surely God doesn't meddle in the life cycle of the billions of species that inhabit this planet. Surely he has nothing to do with the millions of birds that fall to the ground every day, or the millions of mice that are hunted down by good barn cats. He outright says, "I cannot persuade myself that a beneficent," and beneficent means good, "an omnipotent meaning all-powerful God would have designed it so." Now, to be fair, I have to admit, Darwin has part of that right. I mean, though I'm no biologist, I'm seeing a lot of the same things he saw. Yes, the world is rather violent. Whether it's the cat ripping into the mouse, or the wasp ripping through the stomach of a caterpillar, much like the gruesome scene in the movie Alien, or the lion taking down the gazelle in the Serengeti, right? Just turn on National Geographic and we can all see the scenes of carnage. Or turn off the TV and just come out and visit our farm to see how the raccoon left a decapitated mess in my chicken yard, or the coyote that ripped the tail off of one of my ewes, leaving it to bleed out in my back paddock, or our family dog who got its neck ripped open thanks to those neighborhood pit bulls. I can agree with Darwin. It is a messed up, violent, bloody world. And I would have to agree with part of the notion that God didn't design it that way. Genesis 1 verse 31 says, "After God created the world, he saw everything he had made, and it was very good." I don't picture any bloodshed in that verse. However, if you just keep reading, you see what happens when man rebels against God, introducing death and corruption into the world. Before Genesis 3, it wasn't this way. But because of sin and the curse, everything has devolved, Lord of the Flies style. It's not evolution that's to credit, but quite the opposite. Romans chapter 5 verse 12 says, "Therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sinned." And we're told it's not just that man's been affected, but quite literally all of creation. Romans 8 verse 19 says, "For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God, for the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now." The world groans, much like a woman who endures those labor pains. The world groans, much like the crunching of a mouse skull in the jaws of a cat. The world groans with chicken feathers scattered throughout the yard and runt piglets who get squashed during feeding time when their mama flips over to nurse. Or the lamb who gets separated from her mama and freezes in one of those sudden February Arkansas ice storms. Been there, done that, we've got the t-shirt. The world groans. And if Mr. Darwin were visiting our church or our little farm, I'd want to sit him down and say, "Yes, I see it too. And guess what? It's evidence of a fallen world, not an evolutionary theory. It's proof of the ravaging effects of sin and of the world's need for restoration." In terms of what role God plays in all of that, let there be no mistake, it was our sin that made it this way. However, that doesn't mean God is somehow watching from the sidelines in horror. No, Matthew 10 verse 29 isn't wrong. Not one sparrow falls to the ground apart from the will of the Father. God is still totally sovereign over, yes, the life cycle of the billions of species that cover the planet. To what end? Well, among other things, again, it's to convey the fatal effect of the fall, as determined by God himself. Romans 1 verse 18 says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them." And how has he shown it to them? Well, verse 20, "For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. But they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things." The point of nature's witness, not only as it applies to the incredible creativity and power of God to design such an amazing diversity and complexity of living creatures, but also as it applies to God's righteous response to the exceeding sinfulness of sin and the origin, not just of the species, but the origin of death and decay as a consequence for that sin, is that the point of all of that is to remind us of those realities. Whereas Darwin looks at my barn cat and only sees arbitrary violence, I look at him and see a necessary result of the fall. I'm also reminded of the need for Christ, who we're told came and died the ultimate gruesome death on a cross as the Lamb of God in order to bear the great penalty for sin on our behalf, and who we're told will one day restore the world to the way it once was, before death and violence and pain and tears and all the rest. And we're told about what that looks like in Revelation 21 and 22. Or as Isaiah 11, 6 through 9 puts it, "When the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the lion and the fattened calf together, and a little child shall lead them, the cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like an ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the cobra, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the adder's den. They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." I look forward to that day, and every time my barn cat leaves another mouse for me on the porch, I won't question God's goodness and sovereignty, but I will question my own rebellious heart and my own contribution to the fallen world we live in. Death isn't the result of natural selection or random chance, but the consequence of sin, both yours and mine. I'll leave it there. I want to invite you to like and subscribe to our channel if you haven't already. Leave us a comment. Let us know you're listening. Stay tuned for more episodes to come. Until next time, God bless, and thank you for listening.